Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Make sure you enter today's Fox Bet Super 6 NBA contest for a chance to win $25,000. Download the Fox Bet Super 6 app and pick the outcome of six of today's NBA games for your chance to win. It's completely free to play.
Have you noticed Oklahoma City without Chris Paul and Phoenix with him? Anybody notice that? Like, one player has changed two franchises completely. Chris Paul. Not even in the running for MVP. Just saying. Brian Billick won a Super Bowl with the Ravens, you know that, and he's done broadcasting as well. But before that, he was the offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings, and they made the playoffs in 5 or 6 years. He also made the playoffs 4 years with the Ravens and had a winning record, having to go up against the Peyton Mannings and the Tom Bradys and the Big Bens. And Brian Billick, now NFL Network, now joins us live. So I want to talk some quarterbacks. So
yeah.
And they come in all flavors. I mean, there's a lot of wins in the pocket last year with Phillip Rivers and Breeze and Brady and Peyton. And then there's runaround guys. And there's a lot of wins with Steve Young and Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray's winning games. I look at Mac Jones and I think to myself, boy, he's not real athletic. And then I look at Kyle Shanahan, and Shanahan thinks, the system I run's the star. The quarterback's not the star. Would you be worried a little with Mac Jones that on an athletic scale, Brian, not a huge arm, not a mover, the game is kind of changing, would it worry at all about the Bama quarterback?
You know, these five quarterbacks conceivably will go in the first round. There's no reason all of them shouldn't be great NFL quarterbacks. The fact of the matter is 50% of them are going to fail. That's just the way it works. There was absolutely no reason why Jamarcus Russell, Vince Young, Akili Smith, Joey Harrington, the list goes on and on, shouldn't have been good pros. So, yeah, they should be good pros. What worries me about Mac Jones, and it's not really Mac Jones' fault, is that he's basically just the one-year starter, and he sat behind the best offensive line in college football, throwing to the best tandem of receivers in college football, and handing off to arguably the best running back in college football. Now, that's not Mac Jones' fault. What concerns me is, he's never had to have the game thrown on his shoulders.
Right.
And that's probably the number one criteria I think you look at a quarterback. Can this guy step up in the big moments? We don't know that he can't. That's not his fault. We just haven't seen it at Alabama.
Yeah, and then there's the Zach Wilson issue where everybody said, you know, he's got a little Favre, he's great in chaos. But my theory has always been whatever people are good at in life, they'll lean into. And most coaches don't like chaos. Peyton Manning wasn't in chaos because he audibled out of it. Do you worry if a kid like Zach Wilson, small high school, BYU football, who kind of, he's got a little, I mean, he'll run out of plays. He'll make, does it worry you if you get the upside of talent, but there's a wild hair there a little bit that's going to do his own thing?
Yeah, the NFL will knock that out of him real quick in terms of recognizing, you know, you can't have a quarterback that's just a system quarterback. He's got to be able to make plays outside the design of the offense. Now, he's certainly got to work within the offense, but he's got to have that something special. You know, Peyton Manning didn't do a whole lot of other things other than he was special about the design. The design of the offense was his. That was the unique thing about Peyton Manning. But the great ones can make something out of nothing and know when to try and when not to. And so Zach Wilson, he's either going to learn that or he's not. He certainly has the ability, but that's a worthy observation.
Justin Fields, you spend time in Columbus, Ohio. A lot of the criticism has fallen on Justin Fields. He's taken all the hits. He's the quarterback getting, you know, blamed, and he's too inconsistent. I mean, there is some inconsistency in his game, but when I watch him, Brian, it's a pop. He looks like a pop player. He's just the arm, the release. You saw a lot of him because you have a place in Columbus. Anything worry about him?
No, he checks all the boxes. Now, again, having said that, there's a lot of guys that check all the boxes that aren't successful. A lot of people will make the analogy to Lamar Jackson, which I don't buy. He's not as good outside the pocket. He's not as fast as Lamar Jackson. He's better in the pocket. He's got a better stroke. He's a better thrower from the pocket. Now, the ability to process and win from the pocket consistently without those dramatic ups and downs. That's what the challenge is going to be, obviously, as he comes into it. There again, with a hugely talented team, overmatched, you know, overmatching the opponent in most instances, and he has stepped up into the big moments. So, yeah, there's no reason why he shouldn't translate into the NFL. But like I said, there's a long list of guys that should have transitioned to the NFL and did not.
You know, I saw a story this week where Doug Peterson, and I said, if you're an owner and you treat a coach poorly, it's going to be like wildfire. He's going to tell his friends and allies in coaching, like, stay away from this owner. This is a nightmare. And for years and years, that was the knock on Cleveland, is they were rough on their coaches, and coaches talk. It's a small industry, and it's like, hey, man, you're not going to get 3 years. Take the other coordinator job. That's why Baltimore, they stick with John Harbaugh, and the message to the industry is, hey, we know you're not going to win every year. We got your back. And I think that builds throughout the industry of coaching. It builds confidence that you can move your family, you go to Baltimore, you can have a losing season, they're not going to run you out of town. The Philadelphia Eagles, the story I hear, Doug Peterson on Tuesdays was getting berated by the owner, and I thought to myself, oh my God, Steve Bisciotti in Baltimore, you didn't get that. And I don't know the situation you were in Minnesota, but have you heard about other coaches that have to deal with that kind of nonsense from owners?
Yeah, and what's worse, it's not just that the other coaches know, it's that your players know. And when that kind of friction is going on, that kind of intensity coming from ownership, and that's their right. They own the team. They write all the checks. I get that. But when you look at the winning organizations, and I say winning over a long period of time, Baltimore fits in that category, Pittsburgh. There's any number of organizations where that even though it's up and down, and yeah, sometimes you change coaches, there's still a continuity about the way they deal with the coach during the season. That is not the time to berate the coach. It's not the time to add that kind of believe me, he knows when something's not going right. Okay. Now you have, you know, yeah, you got to explain to the owner what's going on if they want to be involved with it. But if that trickles down and the players are aware of it, now you got a problem, because now your workforce is wondering, gee, is this guy going to be around? Is he going to be the answer if he's getting this kind of heat from the owner? So that's it. It's tougher on the players, and will trickle down to the players in a much more critical way than what other coaches think.
By the way, I'm sure you've had offers to come back. You're a Super Bowl winning coach. Why don't you coach? You certainly could. I know you're coaching your one of your grandkids.
Third grade. It's great. I was the defensive coordinator. It was great. You know, it's a little bit, I always tell you, coaching third graders, it's, you know, and versus a Super Bowl team, one group is arrogant and young and thinks they have all the answers, and the third graders aren't easier to work with either. So, it's one of those things where in dealing with your players, it is all about that continuity. It's all about what can you do for them. And you've got to show them that every single day, every single meeting, that you are going to be receptive to what that doesn't mean they run the shop, so to speak, but you're very much aware of what they're going through. And that's what today's coaches do. You know, for me, I had a really great first marriage with Ozzie Newsome, and I was kind of set on, you're not going to go into a bad second marriage. And the opportunities that came along, I just didn't see that being a good marriage. And then it gets to the point where they quit asking.
No. Okay. Yeah. That is interesting. You know, one more question. I got to ask you this. Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, it always feels like there's a little tension. This year with Russell Wilson in Seattle, there felt like there was a little tension. And I've always kind of theorized that when you pay your quarterback $35, $38 million, it puts a lot of stress because of the salary cap hit on the general manager. And when you win, the quarterback gets the credit. And when you lose, the GM gets hit. And that's why Brady is kind of your best friend, because Tom will take a little bit of a current hit to give the GM a little more space. Could I make the argument that with Russell and Aaron, and we saw this friction, once you're getting paid $38 million, by the way, Mahomes restructured his deal this year, that it is harder to be in the building. Because Green Bay and Seattle can't do much, and it does create a little tension in the building.
Yeah, I can't figure out the Russell Wilson situation because, and you're right, exactly right. My son-in-law played in the NBA for 8 or 9 years, and I got to kind of hang around that situation a little bit. And I think that's what you know, those contracts are all guaranteed. And it's all about the players and the LeBron James going, I'm going to pick the coach, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I think the quarterbacks, with the amount of money that's vested in them, and they keep coming back to them and guaranteeing larger chunks of it, so they can beat that cap space you're talking about. So, yeah, they feel kind of emboldened, like, yeah, I'm part of management here, so yeah. I want some say in what we're doing. And that's fine. You need to listen to your top players. But Russell Wilson, I'm not quite sure what it is. Yeah, he wants better offensive line. He wants some good – I get that. But the way he's going about it, I don't know. Yeah, Tom Brady dealt with this all the time. We'd hear Tom Brady, you know, hit and maybe, hey, I need a little help here, I need a little help there. But being as public as Russell Wilson is about it, I'm not sure what he's working for.
By the way, X-Tech Equipment, the number one shoulder-padded football. Brian's an original investor, an elite ambassador. X-Tech Equipment. By the way, you got the vest on right there. The business continue. Right. Is it continue to flourish? How's it doing?
Huge, huge. Number one pad in the NFL. We've become the number one pad in college. Big schools, Ohio State, Oklahoma, or Auburn, Notre Dame. And we're becoming the number one pad for the big schools in high school. Modern Day High School, St. John Bosco, De La Salle, South Lake Carroll in Texas. It's amazing how parents are now more invested in making sure their players are protected and padded right. And X-Tech pad's exactly the pad they ought to be in.
Brian, great seeing you. Continued success.
You too. Hope you're doing well.
Thank you. Brian Billick. Yeah, you know, it is. You pay the quarterback more. He does feel a little bit like management. You just don't want him to go public. And Aaron and Russell tend to think, Russell's never gone public. Aaron's gone public. Russell this year went a little Aaron. He went a little public, and it's...
Well, they tend to go public when they feel unheard.
That's a good point. So make sure they feel heard.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the other thing that never gets talked about with Aaron, they let go of his quarterback coach, his buddy, and they didn't tell him. That's dumb. No, I'm not saying Green Bay is dumb, but that's dumb.
There's generally situations that come up that could be handled with relative ease that get overlooked, whether it's ego or just you get comfortable, and then those things eventually build up and lead to disasters.
I couldn't tell you the last time I yelled at a manager, but if you took away Ryan, our producer, and you didn't tell us, don't we get a call? A text?
It seems like a small thing, yeah. It gets to a point of arrogance, or just you're just comfortable, you know? It's like working with family. Like, you tend to kind of, you know, not work as hard because you're just like, oh, like, you know, they'll be cool with it. It's my brother or whatever. It's the same thing. Like, you get comfortable, and then those things build up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Fight news in the UFC. Dana White announced today that Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier will complete the trilogy with a third fight this summer. It will be the main event of UFC 264 in Las Vegas on July 10th.
I'll watch.
The two first fought in 2014 when McGregor got the win by a first-round knockout. Poirier evened the score up in January, beat McGregor by a second round knockout. So not very long fights between these two.
No, they're brawlers. Poirier is who you would take in this fight. I'm
very
sure.
Dramatic, yes. I don't know. I think that McGregor is obviously not the same fighter he was in 2014.
But he's still dangerous.
Yes, he's still dangerous.
By the way, he's a good watch. All I know
I'm 100% going to watch.
You know, there's something to be said about McGregor. Watching him lose is still wildly entertaining because he is the villain of the sport.
He has taken a very interesting path because I don't think he was always the villain.
No, I think he was the energy of the sport. He was the rising star. Then
right.
He was the star. He's the eroding star. He's become the businessman.
But he is a bit of a villain now, though.
Oh, there's no question. And by the way, we've seen in wrestling, people turn into heels. It doesn't make them any less interesting. McGregor losing because he's, first of all, he just gets the game. He gets the game of UFC.
He's a natural talker, and yes. He can sell fights. And in the fight game, whether it's boxing or UFC, selling the fight is half of it.
One of the most entertaining nights, the most entertaining night my wife and I have ever had at a sporting event was Mayweather-McGregor. It was just a circus. It was unbelievably entertaining.
It was a circus, but it ended up being a good fight.
Yeah, but it's like, we know Mayweather didn't make it interesting because he's a boring fighter. And McGregor literally was in a sport that wasn't his, and he was more interesting than the boxer in the boxing match.
It was such a spectacle.
Oh, it was crazy.
I can't describe Vegas that weekend. It was like one of the craziest experiences of my life in sports.
We have been in this business 45 years combined. Between the two of us. I can't speak for you, but I think I'm saying this, and there is no question the best live sporting events I've ever been to are UFC or boxing matches.
Yeah. I mean, fight nights
by
are
a mile over NBA Finals, World Series. The best thing is to be at the Octagon or a boxing ring. And by the way, not anywhere in Vegas.
Well, because boxing fights and UFC fights have the ability to be history, and you really truly do not know what's going to happen. Like, you kind of have a feeling it's like, you know, a game six, a game seven. You can feel the momentum of what team, if there's injuries, how someone's been playing.
Not
the
in boxing.
Trending. You have no idea.
Because styles make fights.
Right.
Some guys just do not match up.
And one wrong step, you don't see a guy's body before the fight, and he comes out and you're like, oh my God, he's in terrible shape. Like, it's, you get the emotion of the crowd involved. It's just a very unique experience. I'm glad that they're finally letting fans back in full capacity eventually, and that'll be fun. So the Lakers are holding on without LeBron and AD in the lineup. Andre Drummond is the newest addition and has only played in 5 games with the team so far. He doesn't think he's playing well right now. He is expecting improvements from everyone once the team is healthy.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I'm still trying to figure it out too. I mean, offensively, it's probably the worst I've played in my career. I'm still trying to figure it out here. I think for us as a team, we're going to find a way to get it done when guys come back healthy. Because you got to think, we're playing with a different five every night when we're stepping on the court. So you can't expect us to have much chemistry when you don't know who we're playing with each and every night. So, we're hanging our hat on defense and allowing that to protect us to a win.
It's not the worst strategy to hang your hat on defense, especially going into the playoffs.
And by the way, we know this. In the playoffs, refs swallow the whistle. So the push, the pull, the tug, all the physical teams, it plays to their benefit.
And they're 20th in offensive efficiency, first in defensive efficiency right now.
Without LeBron and AD.
Without LeBron and AD. They've gone 6-7 without both LeBron and AD. They started 0-3 and have gone 6-4 since then. The Lakers don't give me as much anxiety about not having the chemistry 100% as the Nets do. When LeBron and AD come back a couple games together, they just have a different level of established culture and chemistry.
They're like friends.
Right, but also I think they have enough of the core of their team that has played together already that it won't be as jarring once they're all together. Whereas the Nets have had no time; they didn't have the bubble, they don't have the coming off of a championship to ride on through the playoffs. I still think the Nets are going to make it to the finals, but how that's all going to work when their big three are together and playing consistently, we still have to see. So I love this story. Alex Rodriguez is on track to be one of the new owners of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
That's right.
The rookie star, Anthony Edwards, who is an excellent interview, by the way, was asked about the move and if he was a fan of A-Rod growing up. And this was his response.
Are you an A-Rod fan at all growing up or anything like that? What you think about what he might bring to the team?
A fan? What do you mean? Like, who is he?
The baseball player, Alex Rodriguez?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Okay.
I know he's going to be the owner, but I don't know nothing about baseball.
I'm sorry to this man. Well, he's 19 years old. He was born in 2001. A-Rod tagged Edwards in an Instagram story saying, "Hi, Anthony, I'm Alex." And he responded with, "What's good, my guy?"
That's funny.
They're Alex Rodriguez and billionaire Mark Lurie have signed a letter of intent, which will give them negotiating rights. So they're going to buy a percentage of the franchise.
I love his honesty.
It's so funny. By the way,
have you ever seen, because it's just a generational thing.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the video? It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. They take two teenagers on the internet. They give them a rotary phone and they ask them to figure it out. Joy, it is hysterical.
Yeah.
They can't figure out the cord. They don't understand you have to hang up for the they don't understand the numbers. Two really smart techie kids. It is like they're on Mars and they found a space rock that talks.
And I know. It's amazing. I love the videos of them listening to old songs. And they're like, we have no idea. I mean, these are like legendary songs and they have no idea what they are.
Yeah.
But I love it. Like, it's you know, it's he's 19 years old. Yeah, A-Rod was with the Rangers when he was born. Like, it's I'm glad that A-Rod has a sense of humor about it because it is really funny. He's such a great interview.
That's great. Good stuff. Joy of the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
All right, Bill Burr, comedian, actor, funny guy, diehard sports fan, next, The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the most successful comedians in America. He's getting back on the road for a comedy tour starting in July. 21 dates starting July 2nd in Vegas at the Cosmopolitan, Atlanta, Detroit, Indy, St. Louis. It will sell out. Get tickets fast. Also a huge sports fan. Also has a podcast, Bill Burr's Monday Morning Podcast. You've seen him on The Mandalorian, F is for Family, Breaking Bad. He's a friend of the show, and his name is Bill Burr, and he now joins us live. First of all, is a Boston guy.
Yeah.
Boston has very good, it's very much about politics and sports, but now you live in L.A., and the L.A. teams are all freaking great. Isn't there a little bit of you as a Boston guy that you at least acknowledge you could root for the Dodgers? The teams here are so...
Boston's political? I never noticed that when I was there.
Really?
You kind of came running right out of the gate. Let me define your city, and then let me blow the one that I'm in. I mean, what are you doing here? You barely even said hello. Like, there's no eye contact. You're just off to the races.
Okay. Let's start. All right. First of all, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Happy pandemic. Good Lord. I love how you think that me and my friends were sitting around discussing politics. We were trying to find a buyer outside of a liquor store. What do you think Tip O'Neill's going to do about that bill? I think we weren't doing that.
But it's a sports city then. It's a great sports city.
Yes, it is. Okay. It is. I mean, I moved away in 95. The last I checked, yes, we are a big sports city.
L.A. gets a knock for not being a sports city.
It's not true, though.
It is not.
Because it's all the showbiz people who come in here who aren't from here and don't hang out with, like, one of my favorite people to meet out here is a native person from Los Angeles, and they can talk Tom Lasorda and Ron Say and Dusty Baker and Steve Garvey, Fernando Valenzuela. I love talking to people like that, people who talk, you know, Wendell Tyler and all those Pat Hayden, Vince Ferragamo, quarterback controversy. I love meeting people like that. Had a few cool neighbors out here that are like that. Old school Laker fans telling me what it was like to be at the Fabulous Forum watching the Showtime Lakers. It sounded amazing.
You know, it's interesting. When I think I asked you this before, you're a performer. And Joey and I have talked about this. I usually defend the athlete over the owner, right? And so when Brady left the system and went to Tampa and won, I'm like, that's good for the performer. He means more than the system. You're a performer. I'd root for you over Caesars. Nothing against Caesars. Nothing against MG. But I'm rooting for the guy to...
Yeah, but no Caesars. I'm standing out in a parking lot. I'm standing in the sand in the desert. We both need each other.
Okay. Do you lean a little... Can a little Boston of you look at Tom and go... He kind of stuck it to the system. The guy beat the system.
Oh, this is such a Real Housewife question. It's his victory, somebody else's defeat.
Yes.
No, I mean, what you had was two of the greatest of all time with the combination of, Brady and Belichick. I mean, Bill Belichick, as much as he annoys you guys in the press because he won't give you any quotes, is the modern day Paul Brown. He just is. The man has eight Super Bowl rings. He shut down John Elway and the Fun Bunch, Jim Kelly, the run and gun, Kurt Warner, greatest show on turf. He shut down three of the greatest offenses of all time within 15 years to go 3-0 in Super Bowls. He won six in New England, two with the Giants. I mean, the guy sucked. He owned Peyton Manning and the Colts to the point they had to get their owner on the competition committee to change the rules of how you could cover receivers, and then they had to steal our offense to win a Super Bowl. I mean, every time the guy turns around, it's like watching Dukes of Hazzard. Somebody's putting a phony a fire hydrant next to him, trying to say he's doing something while they all steal from him. He's unbelievable, and Tom Brady is without a doubt. I think he's, you know, it's like Bill Belichick and Tom Brady who are watching the second coming of Paul Brown and Otto Graham. And to watch them dominate the league the way those two guys did and change the league, you know, like 100 years into the league or 80 years into the league, depending on when you think the whole thing started, or even just the Super Bowl era, to see somebody to have the success that they did is incredible.
By the way, it's funny. You seem so reasonable. Are Patriot fans, like, it's so funny with the Red Sox. It doesn't matter how great you are.
I just love how you go into questions.
Okay, so just
you seem so reasonable. Okay, what unreasonable Boston person are you going to trash this time?
Okay, so with the Reds,
we're discussing politics.
Well, let me finish here. Okay, when the Red Sox, no matter how great you are,
what do you think we do there?
No matter how great a Red Sox you are, when you leave, you get trashed by ownership. It doesn't matter. Manny, Schilling, it doesn't matter. No more. But Patriot fans are okay rooting for Tom. It's like two different fan bases. The Red Sox fans, the minute you leave...
They're the same people. It's the same city. Do you think they ship out all the Patriots fans during baseball season? They're the same people. And you're picking like, no, we still love... when Nomar came back, are you kidding me? He got such a standing ovation, you almost started crying. It just kept going and going and going. You're really just, I don't. You hate Boston. I get it. You hate Boston, and you're. I don't know what your deal is. I don't know what happened to you when you went to Boston. I don't know what happened. Okay, but I am not their representative. I left more than a quarter of a century ago. I'm sorry you went on the Freedom Trail, and you didn't get to meet Paul Revere or whatever they promised you. But I've never met an athlete, you know, I don't know, in modern times, they seem to have a good time. There's definitely, you know, I don't know if you want to, if I was you, I would go the racial issue, if that's what you want to do. You know, for some reason, to help promote my tour, you just want to trash the town that I'm from. I don't understand the whole point of this.
Well, by the way, you haven't been on the road in a while, right? Is it the pandemic for a comic? You just worked. I mean, like, seriously, like for the last year.
I had a lot of fun during these pandemic shows as I got to awaken comedy muscles that had been dormant forever. It's like I picked up a sport I stopped playing a while ago, which is basically learning how to work a hell room again. Because when you're coming up and nobody knows who you are, I mean, Boston's definitely a sports fan because I watched the back of their heads during the first 4 years of my career watching a game on TV as I stood in the corner trying to do my jokes. And as weird as it is, you actually learned how to do those rooms, learned how to get people to turn around, how to deliver your punchlines during commercial breaks, whatever you did. But, you know, once you start selling tickets, you get a little soft as a comic where it goes from, I have to go on stage and get these people to now they're mine to lose. But, you know, standing in a parking lot and everybody's sitting in cars, it kind of levels the playing field. So I've had a great time. I mean, I want things to come back. You know, hopefully people will get the vaccination. I don't know. I'm one of these weird people where I get my my medical advice from doctors rather than going on the internet.
Yeah, Joey and I say that. Suddenly in America, we had 38 million epidemiologists on the internet. We don't know what happened. Everybody suddenly became my doctor.
Dude, the internet is the last place to get information. The internet is grad school for morons. You literally have morons teaching morons. And I'm a moron, all right? But I am smart enough to know that I'm a moron. So I listen to, like, if I have plumbing problems, I talk to a plumber. I don't talk to an accountant. And, like, if I have medical issues, I talk to a doctor. I do not talk to, and more importantly, a doctor who is gainfully employed by a credible hospital, not some lunatic who got booted out of a hospital, which I don't know how you do that. What were you, sewing heads together? I don't know what that is. But all of a sudden, you're on the internet, you know? I don't even listen to these therapists that are on TV. You know, like these guys, it's just like at some point you were listening to people pouring their hearts out about getting molested or something, and you were sitting in your head going, this has got to be more to this, man. I need a TV show. I need groupies. I want like a cookbook or something. So I don't even listen to those people.
Bill Burr, 21 date tour, starting July 2nd at the Cosmopolitan. We're out of time. He was annoyed with me. So's America most of the time.
I was, and I love you, Colin. One of my favorite things is coming on this show. And I have no problem with Los Angeles. I just wish someday you could get over whatever your issue was with Boston. I'm sorry. We had a great two-decade run, you know? Look, the Lakers are going to buy another one this year. I was hoping you were going to get to the hole that Celtics going to win it this year. I was hoping you were going to get to that question.
Well, they're not. So why waste your time? I mean, that's what it really
is. Well, you know what? They're not. They absolutely aren't. But you know what the problem is? The problem with the NBA.
I got 10 seconds.
Is they forgot about competition. You're not watching competition. It's the night of too many stars. When the All-Star game becomes Team LeBron against Team KD, and they're like, this is what the finals are going to be. Why watch?
There you go. We're done. Perfect.